Two matters on its oral submission docket. They are County of Bexar versus John L. Santitos from Bexar County and the 4th Appellate Judicial District, and Mary R. Dillard, individually and as survivor of the state of Kenneth Lewis, deceased, and Mary Dillard, and his next friend of Kimberly Dillard, versus Texas Electric Cooperative and Stephen Paul Bumstead from Anderson County and the 12th Appellate Judicial District. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. Petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal. These arguments are being taped by the court, and you may purchase an oral tape of either argument for a nominal fee from our clerk. We will take a brief recess in between the two arguments. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Bexar versus Santitos.
Well, may it please the court, and Mr. Terry Topham, Susan Bonin, present argument for the petitioners. The petitioners have reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal. And Mr. Topham will appoint the first 12 minutes, and Ms. Bonin will present the for rebuttal.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'd like to first address the two issues of first impression in eminent domain law in Texas. The first is whether a jury may consider diminished market perception in determining the value of the remainder property. Where diminished market perception is not an element of damage, it begs the question as to the cause of such perception, and is testified to by the experts in this case, is based upon and one and the same thing as diminished access and diminished visibility, which are not compensable. Secondly, whether the jury may consider unsafe access in deciding the value of the remainder unimproved property. In other words, is unsafe access where you have unplatted property, raw property, undeveloped land, as decided by this court in Interstate Northboro, does it apply? And where there's no material and substantial impairment of access. Diminished market perception, I've not found any case law saying that that is a compensable element of damage. It, by definition, is an effect. It's not a cause. The diminished, any property that has a partial taking can have a diminished market perception. The key is whether the cause is compensable.
Let me just backtrack a minute and ask you this. In answering this question, do we look just at the land as it is, or do you agree that we look at the hypothetical highest and best use?
You look at the land as it is, and you could also consider the highest and best use. But in this particular case, the highest and best use is testified to by all the experts was to buy and hold for future development. This conceptual plan presented by Santitos, which was speculative, and it was based upon future development, not the hold period. Anything can happen during the hold period. The economy can go up or down. We can have a terrorist attack. So that conceptual plan is not based upon the highest and best use in this case.
But how can you separate out the hold period from the hypothetical development? I mean, do you agree with the concept of hypothetical development but just think it was flawed here because they didn't factor in a hold period?
I think it may be considered with respect to the highest and best use of the property.
Okay, if the highest and best use is as a development.
Yes, assuming that that's the case.
Assuming that's the case. What if there were proof that it would cost more because of this higher or lower grade to put any access to a potential development? Would that be compensable? Not perception or visibility, but just hard cost. It's going to cost a bulldozer more to go downhill longer. Would that
not
be compensable?
Not unless the causes are compensable. And the causes in this case, if you boil down the testimony, the summary reasons of the Court of Appeals, if you boil down the trial testimony of the experts, They are all effects except for diminished access, diminished visibility, and unsafe access. And unless the cause is compensable, there can be no compensation. In addition...
So let me just make sure I understand the answer to my question. Hard costs that would be higher because of the grade, and hard actual sticks and stones to build is going to cost more because of the grade. You say that is or is not compensable?
In this case, I do not believe it's compensable because there's no material and substantial impairment of access. There is no denial of access. You can get a permit either way before or after the taking. You have to get a permit, build a drive. That is not a material and substantial impairment of access just because the drive must be a little bit longer. With regard to unsafe access, you look at unsafe access to the remainder. The remainder is 26 and a half acres, 2,000 front feet. Santikos is focusing on 3.5 acres with 215 front feet at the lowest elevation of the property, adjacent to the 100-year floodplain.
And the rest of the 26 acres is not below grade? Is or is not below grade?
It is, as I understand the record, it is about at grade.
So it's just the 3.5 acres that's in a hole below grade, the rest is above grade?
Yes.
And your position is they could build a driveway at grade, people just drive down into the hole if they wanted.
That's correct. And also, the evidence is disputed with regard to the access to the 3.5 acres. Michael Martin, the county engineer, testified that the south 67 feet of that 250 feet will accommodate a 10 to 12% slope. And it's an engineering fact that, Mr. Martin also testified to a 3-to-1 slope, 3 feet vertical for 1 foot horizontal. It's an engineering fact that that equates to 18.4 degrees. In other words, looking at a right angle, 90-degree right angle, it's 18.4 degrees. That's not an inherently unsafe slope, and the court can take judicial notice of this engineering fact.
Mr. Topham,
yes?
What's your understanding of the law as to whether diminished market value, if it were diminished market value, is that compensable? And there was evidence of the value of the 3.5 acres before and after the taking of the strip.
In this case, it's not compensable because the causes, when you boil the evidence down to the causes, they are diminished access, diminished visibility, which are not compensable, and also unsafe access, which I can speak to in a minute or I can speak to now as to why it's not compensable. Without a compensable cause, the diminished market perception or value is not compensable.
Let's take a hypothetical. If there's a 10-acre resort with swimming pools and hotels on it, and the state builds a highway right down the middle of it, splitting it into 2 5-acre pieces, and the testimony is that the value of that resort has now dropped, would that be compensable, irrespective of whether it's at grade, below grade, or...
I believe it can be because that's one of the examples where if you have like a 1-acre lot at the corner and you put a road right through the middle of it, you affect the size, you affect the shape, you bisect a building, you're going to have damages to the remainder. That's compensable.
So in my example, the lower market value after building the road would be compensable?
I would say as a general rule, it would be, but it would also be subject to an analysis of whether the smaller tracks on each side with perhaps increased access might be worth more. But as a general rule, if you're going to divide up a property and you're going to affect the size and shape, you can have damages.
And in this case, as I understand the briefing, the evidence at trial focused on the costs of actual out-of-pocket costs of dealing with the 10-foot drop in grade, not the difference in market value pre and post taking of the strip. So there's no evidence about the market value itself before and after the condemnation, is there?
Mr. Glenn estimated the value before and after, and he also considered the three estimates of cost to cure in his opinion, which was to fill the entire 3.5 acres with 60,000 cubic yards and related improvements. Those estimates range from $719,000 to $938,000. His estimate as to the damages to the property was $765,000. It was very close and in accordance with this cost to cure.
What is the floodplain? Is it this Caracalla Creek or
Caracalla Creek?
I mean, is that a real creek or is that a Texas creek that's only got water in it when it rains?
Most of the time it's a real creek. And the development upstream to the west is expanding. And that 100-year floodplain extends 150 feet from the north boundary of this property to the south, where it meets this 3.5 acres. And the 3.5 acres is relatively flat.
So the fill would take it out of the floodplain as well as make it even to the frontage road.
It would elevate the property even at least $340,000 of the $400,000 verdict was for damages to the remainder. That will elevate the 3.5 acres to some extent and place Mr. Santikos in a better position than he was before. And that is manifestly unjust, notwithstanding the fact that there are cases that say if that testimony is within the range of the expert's testimony, it's okay.
I'm still interested in more of the hard costs. If unsafe access is compensable, why isn't more expensive access compensable? I mean, if it's going to cost you more to build a driveway because of it, why can't you recover the cost, the extra cost that factors in the difficulty of building? Not based on, I mean, I understand your argument vis-a-vis cars driving by and sort of an intangible perception, but if it's more expensive to build it, why is that not compensable?
For one thing, there's no driveway here to be cured. If there was a driveway there, obviously the cost to cure would apply.
Is it more expensive only if you assume they would have built a driveway to the 3.5 acres someday when it was actually built? Or would in any event it have been more expensive to build a driveway because of this taking?
If there was a driveway there, obviously the difference, if the cost to cure applies, would be the cost of the new driveway versus the cost of the old driveway. Any increase would be compensable. Whether it's going to be more expensive, whether you can consider whether it's more expensive or not, I think depends upon whether you have a compensable cause and what also, in accordance with the Spindor case, which was a cost to cure case, are the damages reasonably foreseeable? With regard to this 3.5 acres, out of the 26.5-acre remainder, you can foresee that you may have some visibility and access problems. You could argue that you might need or you might want a driveway, but this conceptual plan, 60,000 cubic yards of fill, to fill 3.5 acres is not reasonably foreseeable.
No, but you'd agree that just the concept of cost to cure, I'm not talking about the proof in this case, because I understand that you have problems with the hypotheticals and it's too speculative, but if it were shown that access is only on this property based on its highest and best use, there's only one means of access, and this taking is going to cause X amount to work with the slope problem, you'd agree that that cost here would be compensable. It's just too hypothetical in this case.
Yes.
So if they did meet their proof on cost of cure based on a hypothetical, if the hypothetical was valid, it would theoretically be recoverable.
You're talking about a hypothetical highest and best use plan?
Yes. I mean, I understand the proof problems you have in this case getting there, but just the basic concept of cost of cure based on a highest and best use hypothetical, if the proof element's met, you don't have any problem with the concept.
Well, I have a problem with the concept with regard to cost to cure for a conceptual, speculative, hypothetical plan.
Right, but if there were only one plan that would fit this space, and there was one way to put a driveway, and this was going to cost more because of the grade, then you believe that would be compensable.
I believe if we're talking about raw land, there's still no driveway to be cured.
I understand.
And there's access to the 785.
But if there wasn't a proof problem, if there weren't hypothetical or speculative problems, if it could be shown definitely that here's the development that's going in, let's say they have the development plan done, and there really is only one means of access here, and it's going to have to, it's going to cost us this much more to deal with the grade, theoretically, that would be compensable.
Theoretically, if it's reasonably foreseeable. And with regard to diminished market perception, Santikos takes the position that they only presented evidence of cost to cure, unsafe access, and diminished adaptability or reduced adaptability of the remainder to its highest and best use. He says all these are compensable causes. In addition, he talks about the after-take scenario
or options.
Is this
still an answer to Justice O'Neill's question?
Yes, sir.
Is this still an answer to the question?
No,
I didn't think so. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument and response.
May it please the court, well, Mr. Steve Sanchez to present argument for respondent.
Good morning. This is a case about waiver. We believe that the county failed to preserve waiver. All the evidence came in, whether it was a hypothetical plan or the hard cost to show how much more it would cost to develop as a result of the use of the part taken. All the evidence came in without objection. All of the 19 exhibits that showed the plan to fix the problems caused by the use of the property being taken came in without objection. This is also a case about special damages. Just a couple years ago, this court handled the Interstate Northborough case, where you made it very clear about what a property owner needed to prove to show that the uses of the part taken, as they affect the on-site characteristics of the remainder, would get us to the point where a landowner was entitled to compensation for damages. And it's a great roadmap to follow. And I think that the way our case was presented on behalf of Mr. Santikos, we followed the roadmap. The case that we presented was not about Schmidt prohibited damages. We didn't talk about the uses of the existing state right-of-way. We didn't talk about the use of adjoining property. We talked about the uses being put by the government, piling tens of thousands of cubic yards of earthen, you know, of dirt on my client's property that the government needed to expand their highway.
So you would have, if they had built the frontage road lower, you'd have no claim.
The frontage road wasn't within the part taken, so it was not relevant. The only improvements within the part
taken. If they built the frontage road lower, there wouldn't have been fill put on the part taken, so you would have no claim.
If there was no change of grade, you're correct.
And so why is this case different from Schmidt? Schmidt, we said, when you raise Research Boulevard so that all of the businesses along it are now in a hole, it's no claim there. How is your case different?
It's different because in Schmidt, we had new uses to the existing government property. Here we have property being taken, and the government is putting highway improvements.
Property was taken in Schmidt.
But in this case, the focus is on the damages caused by the use of the part taken, which in this case was not a new road, not new main lanes. It was tens of thousands of cubic yards of dirt placed and sloped at a severe angle on my client's property, the actual use.
But that doesn't address whether your property is in a hole or not.
Well,
your property is in just as much. If your property is in less of a hole than businesses along Research Boulevard are now after the road was raised 37 feet.
That's correct, but the landowner's claims in Schmidt related to the new uses of the government property, whereas in this case, this is the new use on the part taken that impacts the remainder and puts it in a hole, which will cost more. It'll cost, according to three estimates, cost over $700,000 to restore the grade to the pre-existing condition.
That's on the 3 acres, right?
On the 3.5 acres.
On the rest of the property, grade's not changed, and you can put a slap of driveway down there without any problem.
That's right. If the whole 26 acres was left in a hole, our number would have been a lot bigger.
Right.
But we're only talking about the 3.5 acres.
So how come you know there would have been a driveway on one sliver of your property rather than on 80% of your property?
And that's a good question. And the reason that we put a driveway that would lead up to this impact of 3.5 acres is because it's the closest corner to the nearest intersection. I mean, it's the northwest corner of the property. I mean, if you look at any commercial development, you've got a road, you've got two corners, they're going to put a driveway in the closest corner to the closest intersection, and that's where this driveway would be. And that was the testimony of the trial.
So how far would you have to move it from the... You've happened to pick a driveway spot that it will be the most expensive place to put it in. How far would you have to move that driveway down? How many feet? Is it 200 feet to where it would have cost you nothing extra to put it in?
Before the taking, there was...
How many feet? That's a question.
215 feet we'd have to move it so it would be off the corner.
So because you're going to have to put a driveway in 200 feet away, you're entitled to hundreds, and a property that's completely unimproved now, that's really why you're entitled to hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage.
That's the unsafe access claim is only one of our compensable special damages. I'd like to go to our laundry list and give you each of the specific damages that we're claiming, if I could. The first is the severe change of grade and topography. That it was a flat piece of property before. You could walk across the common property line, and there was relatively no change of grade. The testimony was it was flat. The highest and best use was for future commercial development, pad sites in front, big box retailer in the back. That was the highest and best use before. Now with this 10.5 foot, this 11 foot wall, slope wall, which, according to both sides' experts, could be converted to a retaining wall along that 215 foot strip during the ultimate expansion of 1604, where you'd have a complete drop. That severe change in grade and topography, if the state exercises all of its rights, according to State versus Ware that this court heard, would cause the incredible special damages to the remaining 3.5 acres, which is in a hole, it's depressed.
What about the cases where we've held that they close off access to a street, so
right,
that you didn't have access at all from the main thoroughfare, but
right,
you still had access from the back, and then we said, no, not compensable?
Well, you handled that issue in Interstate Northborough. You had five driveways. Two were rendered unsafe. One had to be closed. The court still found compensation to the property owner for the cost to cure and the diminished curb appeal related to going from five driveways to fixing one and closing one. And so this court still found compensation to the landowner, even though the property owner did not have to prove substantial impairment of access. That was 2.5 years ago that this court made that decision. So just the fact that we still may have reasonable access along this 2,000 feet of frontage, the highest and best use before was to put that driveway so we could reach the two pads and the big box retail, because it's closest to the corner.
Setting Northborough aside, I mean, arguably,
yes,
it's different because they did affect existing improvements on the property. What about the other cases that I've alluded to where they put a gate or they completely closed off a street and we could access that was now circuitous, wasn't off the main drag, but we said no, it's not.
If you have to drive farther, that's not compensable. But when you basically can't get a driveway permit because you've got a 33% grade, and
you can get a driveway permit to your property
after you spend the money to fill it up.
No, you've got 20-something acres out there. You can get all kind of permits to your property.
Well, that's true, but to max out the development of this property, to achieve its highest and best use.
But that's true of any property that once its access is cut off to a main thoroughfare, you've affected its highest and best use.
True.
But we said sorry, not convinced.
Well, but if you change the existing right of way, The state's got the right to do it, and the landowner gets zero. But when you change the characteristics of the remainder by the usage of the part taken, which you did in this case, to the 3.5 acres, then we have compensable, we have special damages.
I'm thinking about all the highways that have the huge, huge sound walls.
Right.
And the people on the other side of that don't get damages.
Exactly.
Their wall, and how is this different?
Because they put that sound wall on the government property.
No, the sound wall is let's say it's on the band. Sound wall, your property now butts to the sound wall.
Right.
And you have access on the other side of the sound wall. And haven't we said you don't get... You're not compensated for the blocking that occurs because of that sound wall.
Well, if the retaining wall or sound wall is placed on government property, the existing right of way, the landowner gets zero. But if they put the sound wall as part of an acquisition, and it causes that increased proximity of that new highway improvement to that house, Interstate Northborough basically says the property owner can, if they can prove it, can get damaged due to the increased proximity of those highway improvements on that new condemned property. And they are entitled to compensation, which happened in Interstate Northborough, which is happening in this case. This wall of dirt, which wasn't there before, is placed there closer to a 3.5-acre portion of my client's remainder that we're going to have to spend a bunch of money to restore the grade so it can achieve the same highest and best use potential that it had before. The other items
You agree that
yes.
Diminished visibility is not compensable.
We didn't put any diminished
Well, and diminished right. access is not. So right. the question I have is if you speak in terms of, I think your expert's testimony was diminished development and marketing potential.
Right.
To a certain extent, marketing potential depends upon visibility. I mean, a developer coming in is going to look at how visible is this from the road,
exactly.
how accessible is it. And if
true.
Those are not compensable, how can we be sure that the diminished development and marketing potential nomenclature your expert used doesn't include those elements?
Then we look at the testimony. Mr. Glenn said it's going to take longer to market this property, so it would sell. The remaining will take longer to sell.
Because
of it's a depressed property.
Yeah, but this was based on how a developer would view the property. It's going to take longer because the developer's not going to want it as much.
It's got a problem because of the topography has been changed. It's no longer a flat piece of property. It's now it's a depressed property.
And I understand cost that's going to take to
right.
put a driveway in or
to raise
that.
The elevation to what it had before. I mean, it's important to make the landowner whole. You had a flat property before. I mean, the testimony showed that before you could fit in the uses that we've talked about, the pad sites in front and the big box in the back, because it was a gentle sloping. Nothing was in the floodplain. We're not putting any fill in the floodplain. And that after you as a result of that fill, you have to put a ramped driveway down, and the pads have to be pushed back because you only have so much space, you know, and you lose the big box because you have this ramp to go down to have a legally permissible driveway. And that area, that takes up parking area, it takes up building area because, you know.
How many pads can you put in 3.5 acres?
1.5.
So you lost one restaurant space, which it just happens on this totally unimproved land you were certain you were going to put down at the lowest spot, but I assume you're also counting on pads on the other 26 acres?
Well, we're looking at $2.80 land. We're not talking about $20 square foot land. And it's whole to do this, and certain buildings can fit before. And none of the property that we're going to develop is in the floodplain. All this property is developable property. The exhibits that we showed, the conceptual plan, all came into evidence before and after the taking. And in each instance, we showed that the property did not have the same development potential. You couldn't build as much on it if you didn't cure the topography problem caused by the thousands of yards of dirt that were placed and sloped on the part taken. I mean, plus, going back to your question, the testimony from our engineer was that when we have developers looking at a property and then what they see is a problem when you have a below-grade property. They like to develop flat properties. They like to develop flat properties that are at the grade.
Well, and again, that's the what I'm struggling with here,
okay.
And maybe it's just me, but I wrote down four things that your expert said.
Right.
Diminished development and marketing potential.
Right.
Diminished market perception. Three, unsafe access. Four, increased development costs.
Yes.
Three and four I can see as being tangible. Quantifiable. Here's what it's going to take to fix the actual problem. The question I have is the way the jury was instructed, resulting from diminished market perception. It's the market perception problem that's difficult for me because it seems just to encompass visibility from the street and how much is a potential customer going to want to go there.
Well, and I thought that this court wrestled with that in Interstate Northborough because you were presented by the property owner loss of curb appeal. You know, the buildings went from Class A to Class C. They lost the park-like setting, the campus-like environment. Well, you know, I can see your dilemma, but there was an award made due to loss of curb appeal and those other issues. I just used a different term. I'm sorry I used the term diminished market perception. I wish I just said loss of curb appeal and then I could have pointed to the Interstate Northborough case. And
isn't there an important difference, though, between the property in this case and the property in Interstate Northborough, which is in Northborough? The property in Northborough was developed. It had the landscape yard out front. It had parking spaces that it lost because of the development. None of that's at issue in this case. So how... I'm wrestling with the tenuous, seemingly more tenuous connection between your damages and this conceptual development plan. In Northborough, there was no plan. The property was developed. Here we're talking about conceptual plans. Were there any offers to develop the land? It wasn't even platted at this point, and there weren't utilities on it, right?
All utilities are available, no infrastructure. It's a vacant tract of land that's suitable for future commercial development.
Okay. And Mr. Santikos was holding it for future sale to a developer, correct?
Correct.
Were there any offers on the land at the time of the taking that occurred?
You know, I believe it was offered for sale at or about the price that I believe that we, you know, I think that there was, you know, testimonies for sale, but there were no offers.
Let me ask my question a different way, and then I'll let you answer it the way you want to answer it. The conceptual development plans, where did they come from, and give me some more details about those.
Mike Coode is an engineer. He's been developing pad site, big box developments for quite a while. He testified. He came up with conceptual plans that were similar to three or four other developments along the Loop 1604 outer loop corridor. There were two or three different intersections where he worked for Albertsons, works for HEB. He worked for developers of the McDonald's, branch banks, and he prepared an exhibit was basically similar to two or three developments where one, in fact, was in a depressed area and was filled up by the developer. So he used his own personal experience in dealing with developers. He basically used plans that he'd used on other projects, and he said, look, this property is suitable for this type of development in the future.
Were any of these plans in existence before the litigation?
Oh, no, this is just to show highest and best use. I think that there's a distinction between the county's made the argument, look, if you have a vacant piece of property, how can you damage it? You know, only improved properties, like in the Northborough case, can you get these sort of damages. And I think if you look at the Constitution, it says no person's property shall be taken, damaged, or destroyed. It doesn't say no person's improved property. And then you look at the property code.
Let me ask you about, by analogy, let's suppose this was Research Boulevard, and instead of improved property, and then we had a large tract of land where before the elevation, before the research renovation, there's research going right by it.
Right.
Flat piece of land, you have access.
Right.
After research, the property is elevated, and because you can't, it's a half a mile to this way, to this ramp, and another half mile this way. So you're stuck right in the middle where there's no access at all to the freeway.
Quick question. Is their property being condemned?
Yes.
What's being built within the property being condemned by the government?
They put up a wall.
Okay. If the wall is put up there like we've talked before, and that use of the part taken changes the characteristics of the remaining property, then there's special damages according to Interstate
Road. It doesn't change the characters. It's still the grade's the same, except that the access is different. You don't have access anymore onto 183. You've got access from other areas, but not from let's say 200 feet of it. You've got a wall. So now the developer says, well, that's not a good place for a box because it's too far to the next. We're within a mile, half mile each way of a ramp onto 183. So it's just nobody in the right mind would put a big box there.
As soon as you start talking about off-site characteristics, we're in a different equation, different ballgame. We've got to focus on the uses of the part taken. The uses of the part taken
are
drivers.
You put the wall is 200 feet on the property.
Yes.
But you got access around the wall, behind the wall, but just you can't go into the property right there where you want to. And the developer says, well, because of the placement of that wall and because people can't see the big box and they can't get to it, we wouldn't put a big box there anymore. Is that compensable?
If it's about, because someone's complaining about diminished visibility, which we're not, or complaining about diminished access, which we're not, it's not compensable. We're talking about compensable items.
You can still get to your property, just not the way you want to.
Well,
and how is that different from the 183 guy who's holding this property?
Our case is only, unsafe access is one of seven special damages claims that we've made. And I wish I'd had time to go through the next four.
But how is that, my example, different?
Because you're blending off-site characteristics, ramps that are not within the part taken, with use of the part taken. You have to focus only on how the highway improvements being built in the part taken impact the remaining property. You can't focus on what's going on there. I mean, that's what this court has said in Schmidt in 94 and Interstate Northborough in 2001. I mean, you've got to focus on what are the special damages.
So the special damages, you wanted to build a driveway there and you can't because of the wall. But you've got other, you could build it anywhere else on the property that you wanted.
If there's no unsafe access, then there's no compensation. You have other reasonable access, there's no compensation. But that's not the Santikos case. The Santikos case is about thousands of cubic yards of dirt placed on the part taken, and it causes it to be more expensive to develop. It's not as appealing because it's no longer a flat piece of property, and the only way to make my client whole is to restore the grade that it enjoyed before, and that's going to cost money. And the appraiser in this instance determined that he would value floodplain-type properties or lower properties, and he used those land sales to determine that this is what someone would pay for property in a whole.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Ms. Bonin, how do you distinguish diminished curb appeal, which we found to be special damages in Northborough, with this diminished market perception element here?
Your Honor, I would suggest that there is a distinction because in the Santikos case, you have no curb whose appeal has been damaged. I mean, it is vacant land.
I think you disagree with what your co-counsel said. I thought I heard him to say that, yes, you value it based on highest and best use, not on the land as it is.
Well, land is based on its highest and best use. However, you're not entitled to damage in every situation in which your highest and best use has been affected. I think maybe what the court is struggling with is that Santikos has shown some economic injury, but the problem is that this court has said over and over again that a landowner is not entitled to be compensated for every economic injury. Yes, the drives may cost more afterwards, and yes, as Justice Wainwright pointed out, they did show a difference in the cost before, or the value before and the value after. But you have to look behind that and see what are the damages that they're actually complaining about, and are those, in fact, compensable damages. And if you look at the whole diminished market perception concept, which in this case was clearly based on the difference in grade and the perception that the property was in a hole. Well, in the Schmidt case, this court discussed at length why damage such as loss of visibility was not, in fact, compensable.
Would you agree this is a bit of a different paradigm, because we've usually dealt with development property. And the problem I'm struggling with is, do we pretend that a development is there? I mean, do we have to, because that would be the highest and best use, that's what it was bought for and held for, or not? I mean, that does seem in tension to me, because if we have to treat it as a developed property based on its highest and best use, I don't see how we can distinguish it from the special damages by diminished curb appeal as in North Borough. So I don't know, do we totally disregard highest and best use? Do we totally disregard a hypothetical development? I'm not sure.
Certainly in this case, you have to totally disregard this conceptual development plan. The Santikos has somehow tried to take this plan and throughout the stages of its brief, transform the plan into the highest and best use. But if you look back at the record, all the appraisers, including their appraiser and their land planner, said this plan is not the current highest and best use. The current highest and best use.
Okay, different issue. Different issue.
Okay.
And let me just put that aside. Mm-hmm. But if it were shown that this was the highest and best use, then would we be looking at the hypothetical development there, mm-hmm. or just the raw land?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you would be looking at whether or not the landowner had shown compensable damage. I mean, it may be that the highest and best use, if this were the highest and best use, has been damaged in some way. I would suggest it's not in this case. But even if it were, you have to look behind that and say, well, what is the damage? And here the damage is, well, I can't put my drive in the exact place where I wanted to put it. But the case law is replete with holdings that all you're entitled to is reasonable access. You're not entitled to have the best possible access that you could possibly get. In other words, that put the drive in the one most difficult place to get it in, right next to the corner.
So that statement is premised on potential highest and best use, potential shopping center, let's say, or
correct,
pad side.
Correct. I mean,
right. And so if you're going to do that, why can't you say resultant diminished curb appeal?
There's nothing there right now but to have a curb appeal that's diminished. And again, you're not entitled to, or I guess let me put it this way. A landowner's highest and best use can be damaged, and the landowner is still not entitled to compensation, because you have to look at the nature of the damage. And here, the nature of the damage that has been alleged is being in a hole, which is like visibility, and that's not compensable because of the fact that the roadways are built for the benefit of the traveling public. That was discussed in Schmidt. They're not built for the benefit of the landowners along the rideway. And that's why you have no vested interest in the traffic that goes along the roadway, and you have no vested interest in being visible from the roadway.
Okay, but so you say diminished curb appeal. I'm trying to do a rule here. Mm-hmm. Diminished curb appeal for an existing shopping center is compensable, but for a future shopping center is not.
I would say that's correct. Absolutely. I mean, it was compensable in the Interstate Northborough case, but I think you have to limit that case to its facts, or else you're going to have, if you apply Interstate Northborough to this situation, apply the unsafe access holding there, you're going to have landowners coming up with the most difficult conceptual plans ever.
Well, okay, and I understand there's a continuum there, but what if the property, what if the foundation had just been laid? Mm-hmm. Would that fit the Northborough paradigm or the mm-hmm. undeveloped property? You don't look at diminished curb appeal at all.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be closer to the undeveloped property because there's still nothing there. And, you know, what's been affected possibly is the perception of and the grade and the fact that you can't put your drives exactly where you want them. But those are not compensable items. Repeatedly, Santikos, in argument here, has suggested that, tried to make a distinction based on the fact that the damages arise out of the use of the part taken and suggest that in that situation they're entitled to all their damages no matter what the basis of those damages are. And I would suggest that that specific argument was rejected in their Interstate Northborough case where the court said that the argument was that the community damages principle doesn't apply where the damages are caused by the use of the land taken, and this court rejected that argument in the Interstate Northborough case. It seems like the bottom line is, and this was held in Interstate Northborough, and it was also held in the Mundy case, that if a verdict in a condemnation case is based on any evidence that of non-compensable damages, then the landowner, the government is entitled to a new trial. And I would ask on behalf of the Texas Department of Transportation that you grant Bexar County a new trial in this case because non-compensable damages certainly did come into evidence in this case.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument. We refer to calls on the jury. Horrible notation. Brief receipts.
All rise.